Tuesday night, 23rd of October, 1979. Months are getting pretty well gone. Well, we are down to chapter 49 in Genesis. Genesis 49. Maybe we can finish Genesis tonight. Genesis 49. And Jacob called unto his sons and said, gather yourselves together, that I may tell you that which shall befall you in the last days. I wonder what last days he's talking about. You know, we get this expression so often in the Bible. And in different places it's used, and different groups it's used of, and so on, we just have to come to the conclusion that last days don't always refer to the same days. Now, there's prophecy concerning the last days of the dispensation of the mystery. That has nothing to do with the last days of Israel. They have a last days. And now here these boys, the sons of Jacob, are going to have something told to them about last days. And it says, what will befall you in the last days? Of course, now we'll find as we go through this, it stretches a little bit further than just these boys' experience, but primarily, that's what it's about. Now, Jacob called his sons, and so they were sons together in his presence. And they were to hear their father Jacob, but they were to hearken unto Israel. Well, what's the difference between hear and hearken? Do you always hearken unto what you hear? Good to ask it that way. Some of the children don't, you know. Yeah. Pay attention. Let it sink in. And notice it, that they were sons of Jacob, but they were to hearken unto him as Israel. There's the names. Well, there's a little introduction, two verses. Gather themselves together. Well, I guess all of these boys are on speaking terms now, so they could gather together all right before their dad. So that'll be all right. In fact, you know, we don't know of them really having a falling out or anything, excepting in the case of Joseph. But we did speak out when he sent them back home to get their father and so on. He said, don't fall out, by the way. And we weren't able to answer the question on as to whether they were to not to get lost along the way, or whether or not to have a falling out among themselves. So we never settled that. That's one of those unanswered questions. Now there are 12 sons. You find them mentioned in different orders, in different places in the Bible. Once in a while you find Joseph left out and his sons put in. Levi is left out when it comes to inheritance because they don't have an inheritance in the land. And also you'll find that the tribe of Dan is not mentioned when it comes to inheritance in the book of Revelation. Of course, when Levi is left out and all the rest of them are given, why then the two sons of Joseph take the place, you see, Ephraim and Manasseh, and that makes up the number of 12. Now, here we have the actual number of them, and the ones that are named in the correct order. And it starts out with the six sons, as you find your margin of reference in your companion Bible. The six sons of Leah. And then Bilhah's son, Dan. Zilpah's two sons. Bilhah's son, Naphtali. And Rachel's two sons. And you notice in the outline that this Leah's six sons, those are a wife's offspring. And Rachel's two sons, a wife's offspring, making eight of them, that were sons of his two wives. The other four, Dan, Gad, and Asher, and Naphtali, are sons of maidservants. So now let's start in with verse 3. Reuben, thou art my firstborn, my might, and the beginning of my strength, the excellency of dignity, and the excellency of power. Well, that starts off pretty good, doesn't it? But he hasn't finished his sentence. And it lets you down. Unstable as water. Thou shalt not excel. Gonna run down. Like water. Run downhill and away. Unstable as water. Thou shalt not excel. Because thou wentest up to thy father's bed. Thou defiledest it. He went up to my couch. Of course, we had that. Recorded some time back in the book here. When he had taken Zilpah, the handmaid of Rachel, and that was a very, very bad offense. So there we have Reuben. Don't see much about him. Now, if you wanted to go into just quite a little bit, you go back in the First Chronicle, the 5th chapter, and there's a long, long little story there about the tribe of Reuben and so on. They never did just, excel. Now, if you're to look at the map down here, you'll find that Reuben has some land down at the bottom here on the right-hand side of the Dead Sea region in there. He took some of the land, he and Simeon both, on the east bank of the Jordan. Now, when we get through with this and the class is over, you may want to go up there and look up all those sons and where they went. And there, as far as their inheritance is concerned, you'll find two inheritances there for Gad, or for Dan. But actually, the last one, the upper one, is not an inheritance. He wasn't satisfied with his inheritance where he was. He went up there and attacked the peaceful people who minded their own business and took their land and settled there. And so the story goes. People can't be satisfied with their allotment. Now the next two boys, after Reuben, who was the firstborn, are Simeon and Levi. And he says, instruments of cruelty are in their habitation. They must have been a couple of rough fellows. O my soul, or meaning himself, come thou not into their secret. Jacob knew what they'd been up to. Unto their assembly, my honor, be not thou united. Yes, so there was a change in Levi later on. That's right. But he didn't start out very good. For in their anger they slew a man. And in their self-will they dig down a wall. They find some notes on that. We don't know who the man was. I've never been able to figure that out. I just don't have any account of it. And that dig down a wall, some of the old ones, especially the Septuagint, read that they hamstrung an ox. which was a dastardly deed to do to anybody, to get among his stock and hamstring one, which would ruin it for any use forever after. That used to be considered an awfully dirty trick among the early settlers in the country, for a man to sneak in and hamstring another fellow's ox. And it's a cruel thing, because the animal just can't use that foot to walk on. Cursed be their anger, for it was fierce, and their wrath, for it was cruel. I will divide them in Jacob, and scatter them in Israel. And you'll find that that's just about what happened. Levi didn't get a portion of the land, but they did get the priesthood, especially that is out of the tribe of Aaron, who was out of his family of Aaron, was out of the tribe of Levi. Now these three boys, no doubt, were the leaders, or Simeon and Levi, I might say, were the probably the leaders in trying to get rid of Joseph. Reuben would like to have saved him, taking him back to his father because of the fact he was a firstborn and he had a responsibility. I don't suppose he liked Joseph any better than the rest of them did. Verse 8, Judah, thou art he whom thy brethren shall praise. Future is kind of bright for him, doesn't it? Thy hand shall be in the neck of thine enemies. Remember, it is a Judah who would be responsible for Benjamin and taken down to Egypt, and he's the one that made the plea before Joseph. That is one of the great pleas in the Bible. Thy father's children, Judah, shall bow down before thee. Yes? Prophetically? Because it's from Judah that the kings David and Solomon came, and the line right down through Judah to the last king, and also the Lord Jesus Christ. And so it's prophetic. And so he says, thy father's children, that is, the other tribes, shall bow down before thee. And, of course, they had bowed down to Joseph at one time, but now they're to bow down to Judah as far as kingship is concerned. Judah is a lion's whelp. Well, there's a word we don't use a great deal anymore, whelps. Used as the offspring of lions and dogs, so on. Like kittens and so forth. From the prey, my son, thou art gone up. Now this is all figurative here. He stooped down, he couched his lion, and there's an old lion. Who shall rouse him up? Don't know about this business, an old lion. I'd be afraid of an old lion more than any other. For they will eat people. When they get old and can't catch other animals so easily and so on, then they'll start catching people. Who shall rouse him up? Well, we see some of this in the signs of the zodiac too, don't we? The lion, the tribe of Judah. And this verse 10 is very prophetic. The scepter shall not depart from Judah, nor a lawgiver from between his feet, that is, his posterity, until Shiloh come. And unto him shall the gathering of the people be. Well, that word gathering has the idea of says here in the note of obedience and submission. And so it will be. Our friend Fred Heyman up in Sheboygan, Wisconsin, has been writing some articles in his little paper about Israel. And he's been talking about some of these very things in his paper. And especially in the case of David, how that David came into prominence before the people, became the darling of the people, you might say, in today's language, and so on, because of the exploits he did and so forth, and possibly got advertised by the wrath of Saul, you know. Even if somebody's wrath against you can say good for you. And so when it came time for David to be king, there were lots and lots of people in Israel who knew him and knew about him and so on, and they were ready to accept him. Now, it took him a little while to get completely accepted. He had two different crownings. But he finally was king over all of Israel, so not just part of it. In fact, David had three anointings. He was anointed when he was a lad at his father's home, then when he took over his kingship after Saul died, and then after he got the control of the whole thing, and all of them came to him still and rebelled at first, right? Then he was anointed the third time. And here we have a couple of words in this verse. The scepter shall not depart from Judah. Now, of course, it means that the kings will be of Judah. And Shiloh, another name for Christ. So here you have two names right here in this verse. Ten for Christ. We have a note on that. Until he, Shiloh, comes. And we find that there are six titles used of Christ in the Old Testament. And the first is in Genesis 3:15. I'm reading from a note here in the Companion Bible. 3:15 is called a seed. Here in this reference, he's called Shiloh, and also scepter in this verse. In the 24th verse, as we go down, he's called shepherd and stone. And in Numbers 24:17, he's called a star. So there are six titles of Christ in the Pentateuch. Of course, we have other titles elsewhere, but in the Pentateuch, the first five books of the Bible, there are six titles used of Christ. And we have two of them here in this verse. Shiloh and scepter. Now we get into some highly typical language, I suppose. Binding his foal unto the vine. Unto the vine. It says in the note there that were very plentiful in Israel, so they weren't particular about such matters. Ordinary when tie a horse to the vine, or a donkey or whatever, tie them to a post or something more secure, but of course, I guess those vines may be done pretty big too. I know I was so surprised. I always thought that grapes were just had vines and climb up trees or whatever you put them on, wires and so forth. But, they had never had any standing with themselves. And here I got into a vineyard out in California and they didn't have any stakes or wires or anything at all. They just grew up like little trees. That was my first sight of that. They're pruned very carefully and so on. They didn't get too high, but they could reach up and pick the grapes off. In fact, they were kept very carefully, and there was acres and acres and acres of them in rows, and with furrows so they could run the irrigation water in. I might say, too, that these particular grapes, this particular kind, were raised for wine. Well, maybe that would come near using a hitching post for an animal. He washed his garments in wine and his clothes in the blood of grapes. Here may be another little something more or less figurative. Well, there was plenty of wine in Israel. That land there raised grapes. And after all, there's quite a bit of food in grapes. You get fruit sugar from them, which is a very good form of sugar for the body, for energy. And they're pick up several minerals, and so the fruit of the vine is a pretty good food. He washed his garments in vine and his clothes in the blood of grapes. You remember that the wine press of the wrath of God is flows with blood. So there is the likeness of it, what it's like. His eyes shall be red with wine, and his teeth white with milk, which is just simply saying that he will prosper. So much for Judah. Now, he is number 4. Now we come down to number 5, still one of the children of Leah. Zebulun shall dwell at the haven of the sea, and shall be for an haven of ships, and his border shall be unto Zidon. That's right along the coast. So look at your map here after we get through here. You can't see it from that distance. I don't think you can get all of that. But Zebulun. So have a haven of ships, and there's not very many harbors along that coast, no real good. They have fixed one at Joppa, and Tyre and Sidon used to be a shipping point. And there just wasn't much any other harbors along there, and you get way up further north. Now we get the last of these 6 children of Leah, Issachar. Is a strong ass crouching down between 2 burdens. Strong burden carrier. And he saw that rest was good, and the land that it was pleasant, and bowed his shoulder to bear, and became a servant unto tribute. Well, that tells you a little about Issachar. We have a note down here on that, a little translation. The prophecy is, he says, the hireling is the ass or saddle bearer of strangers, couching down among the foals. When he saw the rest that it was good, and the land that it was pleasant, he preferred to pay tribute to the Canaanite rather than engage in the struggle to expel them. Rather pay a little money than to fight. So that tells you a little more about Issachar. Well, there we have finished with the sons of Leah. Dan. Yeah, Dan comes in here, and I don't think that's a short nickname for Daniel. I think that's a separate one. Dan shall judge his people as one of the tribes of Israel. And I have a note that's fulfilled in Judges 15:30. I think that's, or 20. And that's about the only time that Dan was ever of any real prominence. When they went into the land and got settled down, Dan was the first of the tribes to institute idolatry. And it doesn't look like that Dan had a very good future. He says here in 17, Dan shall be a serpent by the way, an adder in the path that biteth the horse's heel, so his rider shall fall backward. Biteth the horse's heel, so his rider shall fall backward. A serpent in the way, along the road. Now, in the encampments of Israel, many of the old writers tell us that the emblems, the insignia, whatever you want to call them, the tribes, their banner that they put out, corresponded to the 12 signs of the zodiac. And the serpent was the sign for Dan, evidently according to this, which was not one of the original 12. And they changed it to the eagle, which is the enemy of the serpent. So Dan's emblem was the eagle and not the serpent in the encampment in Israel. And you have a little parenthetical expression, verse 18. I have waited for thy salvation, O Lord. I think that when we go through these 12, I will begin to see that they are prophetic. And here's a period represented by Dan, where Israel waits for salvation. I'm going to give that to you pretty soon here, and when we get through with the 12. Now we come to Gad. Somebody has flippantly remarked some one time that all women belong to the tribe of Gad, gadding about. Well, I don't think that that's exactly what it means. Some people will try to tell you that in the evolution of languages and so on, this was really the name God in the first place, but I haven't been able to find anything in the Hebrew and so on to prove that at all. Gad, a troop shall overcome him. And if they do, he'll press upon their heel. And he shall overcome at the last. That's all said about Gad. Just one verse, one sentence. And we don't hear very much about the Gadites. Out of Asher his bread shall be fat, or his food shall be fat, and he shall yield royal dainty. Now, whether there is a connection between these two verses, as is here in the notes, I don't know. Anyhow, make much difference. And so we have just one verse on Asher. Now we go on to Naphtali. Let's see here. He's mentioned here as Bilhah's son. That was a handmaid to Leah. So Naphtali is our next one in, is a hind let loose. He giveth goodly words. Now that takes us down to the last two. Joseph is a fruitful bough, even a fruitful bough by a well, whose branches run over the wall. Now, when the branches hang over the wall, whose fruit is it that drops down on the other side? How many fights have been over that in the past? Oh, I remember the little boys of Christina in the for Christians, who was the pilgrims in the Pilgrim's Progress. Her little boys happened to get some apples from a branch that was hanging over a wall. Now, if I remember right, they made them sick. They got a tummy ache. I haven't read that for a long time. I'm going to have to read Pilgrim's Progress again, some of these things. The archers have sorely grieved him, and sought of him, and hated him. Well, of course, especially speaking of Saul. Saul tried his best to get rid of David. You know, Saul had adopted him practically his own son and promised his older daughter to David. Joseph. Oh, yeah. Joseph. Now let me get back on the track again here. Who was I talking about? Yeah. And he didn't know. I was thinking of David, that's right. Had about the same experience. Yes, that's right. The archers sorely grieved him. Yeah, my mind ran off on a tangent right then. And sought of him and hated him as his brethren. I don't know of anybody else that ever hated Joseph besides his brethren. Is there any record of him? Excepting Potiphar's wife. I don't remember anybody ever spoke anything against Joseph outside of his brethren and Potiphar's wife. So it must have been his brethren. But his bow abode in strength, and the arms of his hands were made strong by the hands of the mighty God of Jacob. Well, he was only a lad when he killed the giant. The God of Jacob. I'm getting back again. I'll have to get these two separated, won't I? All right, Joseph. I'll get him down in Egypt where he belongs. No, he didn't. I don't know. Did Joseph ever hurt anybody? We have no record, do we? Don't know he ever harmed anybody. Of course, it's said there in the record concerning Joseph that he restored the baker or the butler and hanged the baker. But that was prophecy that did that. Joseph didn't do it. And then a parenthesis, verse 24. From thence is the shepherd, the stone of Israel. And that was something I was anticipating all the time, because not only is David a shepherd king, but the Lord is also the shepherd of his that are his. He's the good shepherd. Sort of preceded by David, and remember that Joseph was a shepherd too. So, shepherds figure pretty largely in the history of Israel. Now, it said his hands were made strong by the hands of the mighty God of Jacob, even the God of thy father, who shall help thee, and by the Almighty, who shall bless thee with blessings of heaven above, blessings of the deep that lieth under, blessings of the breath and of the womb. And the blessings of thy father are prevailed above the blessings of my progenitors unto the utmost bound of the everlasting hill. They shall be on the head of Joseph, and on the crown of the head of him that was separate from his brethren. Joseph separate from his brethren. There's quite a little bit there said about Joseph. Verses 22 and 26. But Joseph never became king, or any of his successors. That was from the tribe of Judah. Now, we don't perceive all the purposes of God in these things. Maybe it's a good thing we don't. But you know, when we start out with the story of Joseph, why, we just think for sure that since he has the he's accounted as a firstborn and in his father's eyes, and he has a coat of many colors and so on, that he might have a prominent place. But it seems that he doesn't. One verse on Benjamin, the last one, the 12th one. Benjamin shall raven as a wolf, be hungry, for one thing. In the morning he shall devour the prey, and at night he shall divide the spoil. Well, I don't know. Look at Saul. He was a descendant of Benjamin. And boy, he certainly raved against the Christians at the first. And he was just as zealous in preaching the gospel of Christ after he had his vision on the Damascus Road. So I might say he was one who was ravening in all of his work he did. Very ambitious. Well, now there you have the 12 tribes. And I said we had a little note here, and I thought I'd just give that to you. I got it out of Williams' student commentary. He speaks of this chapter 49. He says, this chapter forms one of the great dispensational prophecies of the Word of God. It concerns the latter days and the last days. As in verse 1. And this is the first occurrence of this expression, last days. It occurs 14 times in the Old Testament. In 10 passages, the Hebrew term, it is rendered latter days, and in 4 last days. The term, therefore, embraces the first and second advents of the Messiah. And this distinction between the latter days and the last days reappears in 1 and 2 Timothy. Now, you see, if you're interested in word studies, you've got a chance there. Words sometimes are pretty significant. And he says, a prophecy may be thus divided. Reuben, Simeon, and Levi. The moral history of Israel up to the first advent. Now, the moral history of Israel up to the first advent. And when you see what the prophets say about Israel and so on, and some of the prophecies, it sure fits. Their cruelties, their unfaithfulness, and so on. So the first three, then, in the history of Israel up to the first advent. Judah, at the appearance of the Messiah and his rejection. Zebulun and Issachar, the dispersion and subjugation of the Jews among the Gentiles, the present period in which we now live. That'd be Zebulun and Issachar. Dan, the appearing and kingdom of the Antichrist. Oh, that's a reason for those words over there in that parenthesis about Dan, I have waited for thy salvation, O Lord. Verse 18. Now you see the connection. And verse 18 here says, the cry of anguish of the elect sons of Israel for the second coming of Christ. Now Gad, Asher, and Naphtali, the moral character of that election is victorious, royally nourished, and true witnesses with goodly words. Of course, that's coming in the kingdom of heaven, and as up before the millennium. And Joseph and Benjamin together predict the second coming and glory of Israel's Messiah. Of course, none of this has anything to do with the church, but with the body of Christ. Excepting that Dan there may cover that period and push Israel or without all of their privileges and so on. And he speaks also here too of these words, hear and hearken. As sons, they stood before Jacob, as listeners before Israel. And so that, he says, that shows a difference in their standing in nature and in election. No prophet, ruler, or great man sprang out of Reuben. Making that, again, you see, fit in with the prophecy. And Simeon and Levi were scattered and divided, as predicted here. And the curse upon Levi was after turned into a blessing. Deuteronomy and so on, where it speaks of Levi. And he goes on to say this. Now, you can agree with this or not. The scepter departed from Judah when Shiloh came and Christ came. It departed at his birth. St. Luke states expressly that Mary was compelled by the Roman government to go to Bethlehem to be enrolled in the census. And the Holy Spirit points out that this census was the first made. Again, the scepter departed from Judah at the death of Christ. For he, being the only member of that tribe entitled to hold the scepter, it consequently departed when he died. But Shiloh was not like earthly kings, for he rose 3 days later from the grave. The Holy Spirit tells us in Acts 2:36, the scepter was then handed to him by God. Thus, when Shiloh came, the scepter departed from Judah, and yet was it, at the same time given to Shiloh, whose right it is. In other words, making a difference between Shiloh and Judah. Well, that's just some comments on it that sometimes are helpful and give one a little better picture of all of it. Now, well, see if we can finish here quickly the rest of the chapter. This is what he said to his sons. And he charged them and said unto them, I am to be gathered unto my people. Bury me with my fathers in the caves in the field of Ephron the Hittite, in the caves in the field of Machpelah, which is before Mamre in the land of Canaan, where Abraham bought with the field of Ephron the Hittite for possession of a burying place. There they buried Abraham and Sarah his wife. There they buried Isaac and Rebekah his wife. And there I buried Leah. The purchase of the field and the caves therein was from the children of Heth. And when Jacob had made an end of commanding his sons, he gathered up his feet into the bed and yielded up the ghost and was gathered unto his people. Yeah. He's talking to his sons. And he says, there they buried Abraham and Sarah his wife. There they buried Isaac and Rebekah his wife. That's his father and his mother. And there I buried Leah, yeah. The wife of the first, or the mother of the first six sons. But Rachel was buried down by Bethlehem. She died on the way, you know. So he didn't get to bury her and be buried with. Well, he's talking here. He charged and said unto them, and then you have the quotation marks, you see, in verse 29. That's what he's saying. I am to be gathered with my people. Bury me with my fathers in the caves in the field of Ephron, the Hittite, and so on. So it's quoting what he said to his sons. Moses wrote it. Well, it wouldn't be. Well, he says, I am to be gathered into my people. I know. It's so easy to look around at. You got that mixed like I did, Joseph and David. And it was a matter of my head tonight. All right, we will cut off this part of the study here and get ready for the next half.